This is a lovely sized audience. I was thinking, I was there at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and it was raining at home, and I'm like, stop raining. I thought it was going to like have less people come. But Octavia was saying maybe if it's raining and people can't go for the sunset, they might come along here. So thank you everyone for joining me this evening. So the formula format for tonight, I'm going to talk for about 30 to 40 minutes. Then I'm going to pause. I'm going to talk about a workshop I've got on the weekend. Then we're going to prepare ourselves for a meditation. The meditation will be, you can either sit or you can lie down. We'd love a little bit of time to get organized for that. And the meditation will go for about 20 minutes. And then after that, I'm going to do a raffle and we're going to draw some prizes. So that is the formula. One of my biggest challenges is I've been dabbling in this and quite deeply this personal development space for about 23 years now. Probably 1999 was a big shift for me and dived into it. So I've got a lot of stuff in this fat head of mine. So one of my biggest challenges is trying to, you know, synthesize and bring to you the most valuable stuff over, you know, just a 30, 40 minute conversation. So I'll do my best for that. You know, if you just take one or two things away from this conversation, like you don't have to take everything. The stuff that doesn't resonate, just let slip past. The stuff that does resonate, take that in and take it in a little bit deeper. And when we do the guided meditation, we'll set an intention before it as well to let that stuff dig deeper so it can ruminate with inside of you. From my perspective, a lot of gratitude, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to do this and you making it possible for me to do this. Who's read the book The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle? Who's heard, you know, be in the now, stay in the now, good for your happiness and all that sort of thing? I'm sure you've all heard it. One of the things I find is when I'm doing a presentation, I'm so in the moment. So I get great joy out of this. I'm not thinking about the past or the future, whatever. So thank you for the opportunity for me to do this and have the joy I get from being in this present moment and being in service. So extremely grateful for that. Now, I was at the practice for about 5 years with Octavio and Emma and left just before 2020, so halfway through 2019. Set up a company after that called Bali Co-Creation, and that's sort of been sitting there, was a bit quiet here for a couple of years. So now people are coming back. I was trying to look at how can I best serve people. So one of the ways I think I can best serve people is I've got a very strong strategic background, and I'll talk a little bit about that. So I find that people come to Bali and they want to do a little bit of a reset. You know, come here, step back, island of the gods. Let me get a little bit of clarity on where I'm at, where I want to go to, and how I'm going to navigate there. But what I find is most people are a bit flippy floppy about that. So they get to the end of their time in Bali and haven't really gone as deep, broad as they wanted to here. So I want to help people get more strategic about how to go deeper into that. So I'm going to talk about my Bali reset for this weekend, where I talk about that. It's always interesting to try and work out where to start. I guess one of the things, I love this word co-creation. I love this word co-creation. I love the word evolution. I love it over the word fate. So for me, fate is we sort of get pushed and pulled with it. I mean, that's an okay way you can decide to do that. And sometimes it can be easier to leave your life in the hands of fate, but it may not take you exactly where you want to go at your heart center. And once you get a little bit clear about where you want to go, where you want to be, what you want to do, who you want to become in life, you really do need to jump into this co-creation process. So we can either do the fate thing or we can do the co-creation thing. The only thing with the co-creation thing is it's just a little bit harder. It takes a little bit more effort, a little bit more efforting, a little bit more work. But I think the benefits are huge. So I'm about the idea that I acknowledge that the better plan I have and the better idea and the more consciousness I bring, the better decisions I make, the more I influence the outcomes in my life. But I'm not so arrogant to think that I'm running the show or I'm controlling this universe or anything like that. So I acknowledge the piece and part that I'm part of this creative process. So there's, I call it source, I might even call it the everything, whatever it is for yourself. I'm in a process with source to create. I'm not just waiting with a silver platter for source to give me something. I realize I need to sweat a little bit, I need to roll the sleeves up, I need to do a little bit of work if I want to have a say in where my life goes and how it unfolds. So that's what I'm going to talk about, and I've, you know, drawn some pictures. I love drawing diagrams, so a little bit easier for you to get the sense there. I used to be a consultant in security for the Olympic Games. I was working in Athens, and I don't speak Greek, so I found that I used to draw diagrams to explain concepts. So hopefully my diagram helps the concept get across for you. I was thinking the other day, I was thinking about the term of motivational speaker. I'm not really a motivational speaker. I'm not here to motivate you, I'm here to educate. I'm here to educate in the sense of, you know, you're just taking something away, and then I trust the stuff that lands, if you sort of put some fuel into it, individualize it, then you can bring it forth in the flavor that's right for you. So one thing I said in my little, I had a little 60-second thing on Instagram talking about this. I said I was going to do some myth-busting. So one of the things for me, and, you know, I like Octave and his work. He's about, you know, we got to do the work, and it's always about showing up to do the work. I'm not a big fan. Like, I've been coaching for about 15 years. Like I said, I've been in this space for a couple of decades. I'm not a big fan of this whole confidence show. You know, the reason you're not where you are is because you don't have enough confidence. So come and do my workshop where I teach you to have more confidence. You know, for 15 years I've had clients and I get them to fill out some documents before they see me, and I ask them what they want out of it. A lot of them will say they want more confidence. So I sort of used to, you know, work on, oh yeah, with more competence, we have more confidence and all that sort of thing. But I've come to learn that that is really not so useful, the confidence thing. I've seen it enough, I've studied enough, I've thought on it enough. So I was in the military for 14 years. I resigned as a major in the Australian Army. I resigned the day before September 11, quite auspicious timing. I went to the Australian Defence Force Academy, the Royal Military College, Duntroon. And these are some of the top leadership academies in the world. How many hours of teaching do you think they taught us on confidence? Like, here's an organisation, if you fuck your plans up, you know, people die. Like, here's an organisation that really needs to nail this thing. When we do something, we need to do it extremely well. We never once had any teaching about confidence. Never once. It was just not a part of it. And what I've found is people who work on building their confidence up have a bit of surface level stuff, but when they meet real obstacles, and obviously in the military you meet real obstacles, but even in life you meet real obstacles, confidence usually stops, balks and bounces off that. It's not the right fuel of choice. So what I found, and after reading, I love, who's read Power Versus Force or any of Dr. David Hawkins' work? Hands up. If you haven't, one of the best books I've ever read, Power Versus Force. And he listed scales of consciousness, and he did that by kinesiology. The lowest level of consciousness is shame, highest level is enlightenment. On a scale of sort of 0 to 900 it was, there's a 200 mark. And the 200 mark is when we start evolving beyond ego-based living. We start getting into the juicy stuff. We start getting into the more evolved, higher mind. We start being driven less by ego. And at that 200 mark, there's a particular level of consciousness that is called courage. So my thing is, these days, I don't teach people about confidence. I say, let's just put that off to the side. Let's work on how you can be more courageous. Because when you meet that obstacle, it's courage that's going to get you through that. It's courage that's going to keep you going. It's courage that's going to seem like tenacity. And sometimes when we're being courageous, it looks like this thing that we call confidence. But for me, confidence is pretty surface level. Courage is this deeper stuff. Courage is the stuff that's going to get you through. And the fascinating thing about David Hawkins' work and levels of consciousness is a level of consciousness that precedes courage is pride. And for me, pride means I'm concerned about what other people think of me. And it holds me back from full evolution. When I don't give a shit about what other people think of me and I just do things out of courage, I do it out of service, I do it out of love for it, that's when I start evolving up the levels of consciousness. So we need to let go of this thing of pride. And for me, confidence is really in that pride realm. You know, confidence is how am I looking? Like, I don't care whether you think I'm confident or not confident. It's nothing to do with what I'm doing here. I'm about service. I'm about helping create more awesome human beings, doing more awesome stuff, making the world a more awesome place. And I don't need confidence to do that. I just need to show up time and time again and just come from truth. So if you take nothing else away, like take this idea away, if you've been fixated or focused on how can I be more confident, or it's confidence that's holding me back from starting this new thing or ending this or starting this new relationship or whatever it is, take a step back and ask yourself, how can I be a little bit more courageous in this experience? And use that as your measure. You know, we live in a world where we have so much exposure to what everyone else is doing around us, so much social comparison. So stepping back from that and letting go of this thing called pride, worrying about whatever anyone else thinks you ought to be doing, and coming from your own Christed light, your own flame from within, come from that place. And courage for me and allows it to burn brighter. And when it burns brighter, when it's becoming more illuminated, you become more illuminated from the inside out. And when you're more illuminated, you're sending different messages and different information out into the field. And that's when things start to shift. So some of my teachers along the way, so 1999, it was Anthony Robbins, had an experience and sort of he slapped me around a little bit and caused me to start looking at what my beliefs are, what my stories are, what my values are, and how all that stuff drives me. So very much about the strategic space. And I'd come from 20 years of strategy in the military, then consulting to Olympics, so that sort of landed well for me. Around the same sort of time, got introduced to autobiography of a yogi and Paramahansa Yogananda's work, so got into yoga around that same time as well. So I read all of his books and a few other yogis along the way. They've been very influential for me. Whether it's the Deepak Chopra along the way, the Wayne Dyer's, Louise Hayes, a lot of different people there. But for probably the last 10 plus years, I've been following the work of Dr. Joe Dispenza. Who's familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza's work? Okay, so remember this name. I think he's doing one of the most phenomenal things on the planet. Like he's... The yogis knew it for a long time. It could actually reverse terminal illness. You could bring people back to health. You know, I had the joy of meeting Octavio's teacher, David Goulet. He was just a champion. 73, and I just for giggles, I think he did a blood test to see what his biological age was. And it was 25 years less, no surprises there. So he's 73, biologically 48. He's actually more like a 30-year-old, the vitality he has. But for decades, he's been working on reversing illness, terminal illness, all sorts of things. So he's a great person doing that. Joe Dispenza is another person doing that. And Joe Dispenza has always wanted to bring the metaphysical and science together. So some of the studies he's doing is just off the charts. And he's got neuroscientists taking blood samples. He's doing brain scans when people are meditating in real time at his events. People are having gamma brainwave activity. So you've got high beta wakefulness, alpha, you're going down into sleepiness, theta, deeper, hypnosis in theta, delta. And then gamma brainwave is like, it's highly organized like beta brainwave, like it's a pretty high frequency but highly organized. So they've been measuring, and people have been, you know, had readings of gamma brain activity, which is something like 200 standard deviations of normal. Generally, if you're 3 or 4 standard deviations from normal, that's a big deal. 200 is just off the charts. The neuroscientists like took blood cells from these meditators and put it beside cancer blood cells. And what happened was the mitochondria in the cells of the cancer, so mitochondria create energy. The mitochondria in the cells of the cancer cells reduced by about 70%. So just by putting this cell from someone who's at an elevated state, maybe into gamma brainwave activity, it's altered what's happening at that cellular level and bringing information coherence. So when it comes together with that cancer cell, it deregulates that cancer cell so it can't reproduce. Like, that's the possibility. And that's where, for me, my yoga journey has got me super, super fascinated about the meditation piece of it. So we move our body to create alignment. You know, for me, alignment between the hemispheres of the brain, prepare our body, move in particular ways so energy flows through our body more easily. We do our shavasana, let the autonomic nervous system reintegrate whatever it's learnt from that yoga asana. Then we sit down to do some pranayama. So we start using physical movement to move this energy through us, and then we drop into this meditation thing. And that's where the magic's at. And that's, for me, where this conscious co-creation thing is about, bringing the inner work together with the outer work. So the word I'm writing in the middle there is become. One of the first books I wrote 10 plus years ago was called Becoming an Elite Goal Setter. And I had like these 6 steps to becoming an elite goal setter. First one was have a crystal clear vision. Be very clear about what it is that you're going towards so you can imagineer in your brain. The second part was connect to your why. You know, why is this thing something I desire? And so if I'm working with someone and I ask them what they most desire, they tell me, and I'm like, nah. I'm waiting for goosebumps. When someone tells me what they most desire, and if I don't get goosebumps, I send them back to step one and they get clear again. Because what I find is so many of us are conditioned to think the goals that we want are actually our goals. But if we truly step back and get 100% honest, let go of pride and trying to please everyone else around us, it might be 180 degrees different from, you know, what mum wants, dad wants, partner wants, siblings, whatever. So we sort of keep going through that process until we lock onto something and we're like, yeah, that resonates at a deep level. That owns me and I own it. But the third step was, who do I need to become in order to achieve that thing that I've said I want to achieve? And that's this becoming thing. Realising, so someone, and you know, I have clients that want to make lots of money or whatever, but they might be a sloth and they might be totally lazy and that sort of stuff. And I'm like, do you think in the current way of you, you know, as you show up, the beingness that you show up with, do you think the personality that you show up with, how you step into whatever it is you're doing, is the same as the person you need to be in order to achieve that big thing you want? So part of achieving what you want is about, who do I need to show up as in order to achieve this thing? Like, we can achieve all this thing. We can achieve magical, mystical things. I think, you know, most of us could 10x up to 100x whatever we think we can create. I think we can create 10 times plus of whatever we imagine we can. And doing this together, you know, brings that more possible, or makes that more possible. So who do we need to become? So that, for me, is the most important thing. Like, how can I truly become the person I need to become in order to achieve this thing I want to achieve? Joe Dispenza had, like, it was his second book, I think, called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. So without even reading the book, like, that's just, that title says it all. Because what he's saying is, if I think this way, use my emotions this way, behave this way, I'm going to act in a certain way. So I create some sort of destiny. And that's destiny in achieving the goal things I want. But it's also my genetic destiny as well from a health perspective. If I'm thinking this way, emoting in this way, behaving in this way, I'm going to create a certain genetic destiny for myself. And if I want to change that, if I want to heal from the inside out, then I need to change some of those things along the way. So for me, for the last 20 years, it's been trying to figure out what are the things I can do that are the biggest needle movers? What's got the biggest return on investment when it comes to achieving the things I want to achieve in life? And that, you know, the things you want to achieve in life, that evolves over time. You know, and I think the last few years has caused a lot of people to step back and ask some deeper questions about what's most important. So there's probably some changes along there. And I think we've been going for a long time, a very egoic, competitive, striving, fame, beauty, wealth, all of that sort of stuff. I think it's taken us off course. That stuff's okay if it's the byproduct of doing stuff that, for me, is heart-based and service-oriented. But if that's a fixation and focus, it does a funny thing to our psyche. Probably leans us in the direction of narcissism, for example. So let me talk on the sort of the inner stuff. So like I said, I've probably learned most from, you know, my 20 years of digging into the yoga space, learning a lot from Octavia along the way, and also going into Joe Dispenza's work. So David Goulet's big in the quantum field as well, so he's always looking at what's the science and brings the science into it. So for me, even in my marketing, I think I do outward marketing. Like, I'm a coach, I write newsletters each week, write my books and different marketing things. But I actually find my best marketing is done in the inner landscape. I'll be in the inner landscape and I'm like in the zone, coherent heart, coherent brain, send a signal out to the universe that I'm probably ready for another client. And, you know, 1 or 2 days later, I'll have someone go, oh, I went to one of your workshops back in 2018 and I would like to do some work with you. I want to work with you around personal stuff and business, which is my total jam. That wasn't my marketing stuff. Like, this is 5 years ago. That's tapping into the unified quantum field, the field of energy that everything's connected to. So, again, we want to do these physical things, like, if we just do all the physical stuff and none of the inner stuff, we're using all force through life. When we tap into the inner game, we're tapping more into power. But if we're just in that spiritual space and we don't know how to interact with the physical landscape, then that's not really a great life experience as well. I mean, the yogis were about doing their work so they could show up as powerful human beings and make a difference. So the same thing is, you know, we work on this inner landscape and we work on the outer. So let me start with the inner. So this is, like I talked about, it's a clear vision. And at the end of this, you can take pictures of this little diagram here. So I talked about that. We didn't need a clear vision, but I've changed. Like, I was taught in the military, you know, very clear strategic planning and all that sort of stuff. Come up with your plans, contingency plans on contingency plans, like... The planning process was elaborate and went for a long time. But I've since realized, since I left the military and I studied neurolinguistics programming, hypnotherapy, I've done a lot of different therapy type things. I've realized, like, I come up with the best plan I can, but then I realize that there's some other stuff outside that might change. So these days I come up with a clear vision of what I want, but I'm open to the idea it might show up slightly different to what I imagine it to be. So one of the things is we get clear about what we want, but if we get fixated on, you know, say for an example, a car, we get fixated on a blue car in this particular shape. There might be sitting over here a red car, slightly different shape, which is exactly the same as what we want, maybe even better. So if we fixate on, you know, the clear vision of what I want, and don't open to the idea it might come in a slightly different shape, size, timing, formula, format, or whatever, we might miss out on this thing. You know, I believe we live in a universe where, you know, life just wants us to have an abundant experience. One of the things for me is, like, this clear vision, and who recalls when the book The Secret came out? I mean, it's probably 10 or 15 years now since it came out. So there was a book called The Secret, Rhonda Byrne, and then there was a movie. And they were all about, you know, sitting there imagining what you want, and, you know, if you'd, like, imagine enough, it will come in. You'll, you know, open your letterbox up and you'll have that check in the mail, or something will, you know, mysteriously appear. So that's an okay concept, but I think it's incomplete. So for me, it's like this thing here, but for me, I call it like heart coherence. Heart coherence. It's about the emotional state. It's about rehearsing the emotional state of the experience. You know, I'm going through a process at the moment where I'm doing my own co-creative thing. We're in the process of leasing some land for 25 years, want to build a house on it, farm, that sort of stuff. And when I do meditations, I go in there, get myself in a coherent heart state. So once I'm in a coherent heart state, once I've let go of my attachment to myself and things about me, and I come back in and I'm aiming to make the internal world more real than the outside world, I actually walk through this house that I've built. I get to sit in the seats. I have meals there. I imagine someone coming over and us sitting at the dinner table and that sort of stuff. And I have the emotions that go with that. So I'm internally rehearsing the experience that I want to have in a future event. And what I'm doing from a quantum physics perspective is I'm collapsing the wave function. So frequencies carry information, and when we put our attention on a frequency, a quantum event occurs where that wave of possibility turns into matter. So it turns into a singular event. So if you've seen the double slit experiment, quantum physics, you know, once we put our attention on something, things start to shift at a quantum level. So the work we do in meditation is about how can we influence the quantum field? How can we influence this field of everything? And we do that by, so as I'm, you know, picturing my thing I want, I'm creating a bit of electrical activity in my brain. That's starting to go on there. Then when I connect to my emotions, like when I bring in that heart coherence, then I'm starting to create this coherent field of energy. I'm sending out a clear signal. Joe Dispenza would say the thought sends a signal out, the emotion pulls the event back to us, and then gratitude is the ultimate state of receivership. So this ability of being able to experience something and actually thank the everything source for that thing before it arrives, like that's the heavy duty stuff. That's the change making stuff. That's when you're actually affecting this quantum field. Because every possibility exists in the quantum field as a frequency of information. So, you know, this whole inner and outer world exists in the everything for me is conscious, loving, and intelligent. So when I go into a meditative state, when I create heart coherence, when I connect to love, when I connect to those elevated emotional states, when I get out of the lower states of fear, worry, frustration, out of worries about safety, when I get out of that stuff, I start getting into heart coherence and I start taking that energy up higher. I'm starting to create this coherent field of energy, this torus field of energy around me. I'm starting to send a signal out to the field. And that's a coherent field of energy going out, because most of the time if we're just in our head firing off ideas of what we want, we're sending out very incoherent signals to the universe. The universe would like to help us. It loves us. It loved us into life. But it's like, I actually don't know what you want. You're sending this one day, next day you're sending something else, day after that you're sending something else. When we drop into it and we create this coherent signal, we send this coherent message, information out into the field, and we connect with the frequency that matches that, and we start pulling that quantum event back to us. So for me, the inner work actually is much, the possibility to get much faster results doing the inner work well than doing the outer stuff. Now, that doesn't mean I don't do the outer work, because I'm a big fan of, I might do that inner work to send the signal out to the universe, but I also show up in life in a way that makes it clear in this three-dimensional world what it is I truly want. So I need to do this work so I'm clear of it. I'm sending a clear signal to the universe. I'm also sending a clear signal to the world around me that this is what I most desire. And then it might be that synchronicities come up. Someone notices, oh, this is what you want. Oh, I know someone who could help you with that. And they start to come towards me. So I need to do the physical stuff. I'm not just going to stay in this place. And again, I'm about co-creating. I'm about stacking the cards in my favour. I'm about how can I do the most stuff in the way that requires the least amount of energy that gets the biggest result. So what can I do in the internal world? What can I do in the external world? So again, it comes back to, so to become in this inner world, I'm doing internal rehearsals. I'm mentally rehearsing who I need to become. I'm actually having that meditation and I'm feeling what it feels like to be this person who's courageous. I'm feeling what it feels like to be this person who's tenacious. I'm feeling what it feels like to be this person who can sort of stand and hold themselves in discomfort and not step away from it, can actually lean into it. I mentally rehearse that thing. And what I'm doing too at like a physiological level, I'm starting to prime my brain in advance of an activity. So my brain already knows what is likely to happen in that event. It doesn't have to, you know, use willpower, like fire itself up, burn energy. We've been mentally rehearsing it, mentally rehearsing it. So, you know, I've mentally rehearsed doing this presentation about, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 times. I would do a meditation, maybe finish the meditation. I'd mentally rehearse me sitting down here, pointing my thumb at the background, squiggling things on the board, having some people in front of me and that sort of stuff. So I've already rehearsed it. So when I step into it, it just feels comfortable. I don't have worries about worries. So when it comes to becoming, this is what I learned before, and I've learned over the last 20 years, solidified with some of the work with Dispenza. But this idea of these three parts, and I'll... So the thinking at mind level. We need to master our mind as best as possible. So I have clients come to me and they tell me their stories, and I'm constantly challenging their stories. So most of the obstacles that are in the way of someone achieving what they want to achieve are the stories they've told themselves around their capacity or not to overcome that obstacle. So most of it is story. And I find within the story, one of the things that hampers most people is the language they use when they tell stories. And what I find is if people tell a negative story and use emotive language, they're likely to turn up the dial in their emotions, but they're more likely to turn up the dial in their survival emotions. They're more likely to stay in these survival emotional states, the lower three chakras. So it's about being very mindful of the language you use. You know, I used to have a client of mine who would exaggerate things. Exaggeration is okay, like for storytelling and that, but it doesn't really serve us when we exaggerate a tragedy, when we exaggerate all the wrong things, because all that does is turns up the dial on our emotional state. And if we don't have good coping mechanisms for dealing with those elevated survival emotional states, then we might turn to distraction. We might turn to alcohol, drugs, you know, whatever the other vices are there. So be very clear about the language you use internally, self-talk, and also externally. The other one, and this was where I got introduced to, you know, the beliefs work with Tony Robbins way back when. So that book, The Successful Mind, is really about beliefs. So if someone has a belief, you know, I've come across this countless times, I need to be liked by everyone. So if I have a belief I need to be liked by everyone, and I go into a room of people that I don't know, is my belief about I need to be liked by everyone likely to make it easier for me to navigate that space, or do you think it's going to cause me to potentially close in a little bit, be very guarded, be very self-conscious? Or did that person just look at me strange? Or when I entered that group, was one of those people not wanting me to come into that group? If I have a belief that says I need to be liked by everyone, it's going to affect me in a serious number of circumstances in my life. Now, if I change that belief and I have a belief that says it's okay not to be liked by everyone, is that true? Is that more true? So the belief about I need to be liked by everyone is just something made up. It's not necessarily a truth with a capital T. I want to get closer to a truth with a capital T. It's okay not to be liked by everyone. And if I let go of the need to be liked by everyone, I can be more of myself. I can feel as though I'm safer being myself. I can show up as myself. And if I show up as myself, I come back into alignment, or more alignment with my dharmic path as well. One of the things, if someone's trying to be something or someone that they're not, it uses a lot of energy to maintain that, facade, that face. If we just show up as ourselves, it doesn't require all this extra energy. So I need to look at, what are my beliefs? I need to look at, what are my beliefs around myself? What are my beliefs around my relationship? What are my beliefs around money? What are my beliefs around success? And I can guarantee the area where you have the biggest challenge in your life is where you've got the most crappy limiting belief. And if you dig around and dig up that thing, if you ask the question, what am I telling myself, which causes me to have this challenge in this particular area of my life, if you bring that to the surface and truly look at it, you'll find it's not true. So why would you hang on to something that isn't necessarily true, particularly when in a subconscious way it's likely to drive us on autopilot? You know, the neuroscientists suggest that we're only conscious about 2% to 8% of the time. 92% of the time plus we're on autopilot. Autopilot based on our beliefs. So we want to, you know, work on raising our level of consciousness. So we do these practices. We do meditation. We do these practices to raise our level of consciousness. So we have a heightened level of consciousness, which means we're more consciously aware, which means we have a broader perspective. We're more likely to make better choices. At the same time we're doing that, raising our consciousness, we need to understand what's going on at a subconscious level. And we need to start delving into that. And sometimes people aren't willing or interested or want to go into that place and space. But it's in our best interest to look behind those curtains to see what is the dialogue that's keeping me in this particular way of being. And owning the idea that our personality is not fixed. So someone says, I'm a shy person. So they're owning that I am a shy person, rather than I'm doing shy because that's my habit I've built up. Because when I was a young girl, I had this experience and this caused me to be this way. Or when I was a young boy, someone said this to me and I closed up and that caused me to do this shy thing. And now I call myself this shy person. That's just an act. So I need to reverse engineer it and go back and see if we can, you know, change this thing. This is Joe Dispenza, breaking the habit of being yourself. It's like looking at these things. And we do this inner work as well, to work on processing that stuff from our past, evolving beyond it, practicing what it feels like not to be that shy person, and doing that internally, priming our brain, preparing our brain for it. Second thing is, I'm calling it emotional mastery. And it's our ability to manage our emotional states. So Joe Dispenza talks about survival emotional states. in the lower three chakras. He calls them energy centers, and then elevated emotional states when once we get to the heart and above. So a lot of our fear, a lot of our stuff is down here, and a lot of the work Octavio does is working on moving this, transmuting this energy that's stuck down low, and, like, you know, taking it upwards, liberating that energy. So much of our work around our emotional state is, how can I move from survival emotional states into elevated emotional states? So we catch ourselves in fear, and we might use the thinking thing, we might use the beliefs thing. Is there something that's causing me to show up this way? What is the emotion I'd like to experience in this particular time? Everyone stand up. Stand up. Stand up. So putting your hands up in the air like this, putting a big smile on your face, you can close your eyes, taking a deep breath, letting it out, audible sigh maybe, increasing the smile on your face, connecting to something you love or someone you love, and connecting to our beautiful, scruffy, mangy mutt of a dog. Puts a smile on my face, fills me with joy. Connect to someone or something, somewhere that brings you great joy. Feel that. Feel that through your entire body. Bring your hands down, place them over your heart. Bring that feeling right into your heart center. The love, the gratitude, the joy, the excitement, the awe, the wonder. And now taking a seat. So we didn't have to put anything in our mouth. We didn't have to pop anything or whatever. We actually have the capacity to change our emotional state. You know, one of the ways is changing our physiology. So this sort of power move changes what's happening, reduces our cortisol level. Maybe it increases our oxytocin. I forget the chemicals that are going on there. Connecting to our heart center, connecting to something we love, remembering that thing. So again, we can change our emotional state. So the better we can get at that. And this is a big subject and a big topic, and I spend a lot more time working on it myself and working on it with others. The ability to stay stable. Like I was thinking about decision making. So I wrote the book, and it's downstairs, Decision Making Mastery, and I wrote the book over a year. And what I realized, the most important thing in decision making is, one, are we in the right physiological state? So am I hydrated? Am I not tired? Maybe have I got the fuel in my body? So I need to make sure physiologically I'm in the state to make a decision at the level I want to make it, if there's high consequences. The other one is, am I in the right emotional state? Because what happens if we're in a survival emotional state? Our vision goes hyperfixated, tunnel vision. We don't see the big picture. So part of being a co-creator in our life and making good decisions is our ability to be in the right emotional state so that we can see everything. We can put all the pieces and parts together. We can actually use higher mind to see into the future and imagineering the consequences of the choices we're making. But we can't do that if we can't manage our emotional state. So it's a huge part of the creation process is managing the emotional state. And again, we build up our fortitude of that in here. Plus, there's different strategies we can do in that space. The last one is behaviour. So, you know, what do we physically do? So for me, return on investment for me is, what are the habits? Because in our brain, we want to get something into a habit. Once it's a habit, it drops down into the lower part of the brain. There's a higher density of neurons there. So instead of using our willpower, which is sort of prefrontal cortex, frontal lobes, which churn and burn more energy, we want to create habit, because then we're using more the lower brain cerebellum around that area. Because if we're using willpower to power our way through life, we get fatigued. So we want to be particular about the habits that we establish and create. So for me, I'm huge on a morning ritual. Who has a pretty solid morning ritual that they do 365 days of the year or 366 on a leap year? I've been doing the same rituals for 10 years. And, you know, one of the things, they're a habit. I don't need to get up in the morning and think about it. So the best way to form habits is first work out which habits have got the highest return on investment. Movement, meditation, and for me, intake of something in high nutritional density. You know, so I get up in the morning, I have a drink of water, go to the bathroom, come out of the bathroom. I do what I call energization exercises, loosely based on some of the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. So go through those, I'm moving my spine in different directions. Then I go towards my office and I got a chin-up bar. So I do 8 chin-ups every morning before my meditations. It seems strange before meditations, but I imagine like I'm extending my spine, but I'm also psychologically practicing doing something I don't want to do. Who loves doing chin-ups? Exactly. No one loves doing chin-ups. So every morning I'm conditioning myself psychologically to do things I don't want to do. Michael Beckwith had this great saying, what's not feeling like it got to do with it? I didn't feel like doing it. Yeah, what's that got to do with it? Do it. So I do these things. So I'm conditioning myself psychologically, and I know physiologically, you know, this stuff is good for me. Then I sit down, I've got my yoga, I've got my meditation mat. Same pillow configuration for the last 6 or 7 years. Exactly the same place. Oriented at exactly the same place. I'm also priming my body to know exactly what happens when I sit down on that. It's like anchored into the idea, oh, we're doing the meditation thing. So I do the meditation thing. And then after the meditation thing, I do physical activity. Then after the physical activity, I might plan my day. While I'm in this prime, optimum, thinking, feeling, being state. That's why I'm mapping out my priorities for the day. You know, not when I'm tired, not when I'm flipping and flopping around, when I'm completely centered and grounded. That's when I know what's most important for me to get done in the day. And then I take the dog for a walk, and then I might have a green drink, or it might be a mix of different superfoods, some coconut water, and I slug that down. So what I do with those habits is they're just one after the other. So it's just a string of habits, and I don't break that. If I break that string of habits, it's much harder to bring it back on course. It requires willpower. So I want to create habits, and I know the best habits, and I just want to do them one after the other. So I probably do about 2 hours working on myself every morning to prepare myself for the being I need to be in order to do what I do. So I want to be there when I'm with clients. I want to be completely grounded and centered. I want to have an elevated emotional state so I can shift the energy of them as well. So that's who I need to become. So I do those physical things in order to do it. So I'd recommend if you don't have a morning routine worked out, like have a look at it. It's one of the few things we can control. It's much harder to control our time in the afternoon, but we can decide what time we get out of bed. And you know, my beautiful partner here, Ferry, she knows what I do, and like I have an agreement with her that, you know, I do this stuff in this time, and then after that, you know, I'm, you know, back into the relationship. But I know that if I don't do this work on myself, I'm not going to show up in that relationship as the best person I can be. So work on your routines. I'm looking at time, and I think I've said enough over time and that sort of thing. So if I was to summarise and encapsulate this, it's if you want to be a conscious co-creator in your life and your destiny, it requires your specific input into it rather than be pushed around by fate. And the best way to do that is do the internal stuff and the external stuff. And when we're in this internal space, it speeds up the results. And I believe at the moment, this moment in time in world history, there's this creative energy on the planet. So I think when you, you know, come from, I call it your Christed center, when, you know, you move through this place, there's this creative energy on the planet at the moment. When you come into alignment with yourself and with it, I think you can create so much more effectively and so much more powerfully at the moment. So it really is about becoming in alignment with that. And that might cause us to slow down. You know, this world of hamster wheels and all that sort of stuff. The challenge with that is if we're moving too fast, we can't be self-aware enough of what needs doing. I was using the metaphor the other day with a client of mine saying, like, you know, go through life like you're doing a Sunday afternoon drive. And you're doing a Sunday afternoon drive and you're like, oh, I feel like pulling over. So you just pull over and you stretch your legs and that sort of stuff. Go a little bit further. Maybe you take a break and maybe you slow down and you watch things. And maybe you decide, oh, it'd be good to stay in this bed and breakfast for the night or whatever. You have that ability to tap into what's happening in here. So sometimes slowing down allows you to get more clarity and allows you to come up with better decisions, which might leapfrog the needing to do everything yourself in force. So that's another thing in the co-creative process. So if you're not committed to a daily meditation practice, start working towards it however you need to do it. It's one of the most powerful and empowering things that you'll do in your life to work on this evolutionary process. Let go of attachment to pride. Challenge yourself on it. See where you're at. See how attached you are to what other people think. And start pulling that wasted energy out there, pulling it back into here and start using it for your own purpose. Come from courage. And know that courage is a thing that's going to take you through those obstacles. Okay. Has anyone got any questions? Yeah.
How long does your morning rituals...
So what I'd say is, like, if I'm at home and I've got space, it might be 2 hours. But I have a travel version. And what that means is I concertina it. If I'm like traveling, I'm like, okay, so long as I meditate 5 to 10 minutes, I have these energization exercises that I do that like 5 to 7 minutes. And then like I just green drink powder and I slug that down. So I'm tick, tick, tick. So I never break the chain of my morning routine. It just changes depending on what my circumstances are. So I've prepared in advance. Yep. Yeah, I've got my partner there, and I've got a couple of dogs that demand my attention, want to go for walks and that sort of stuff. Life is hard, like in a lot of things. You know, we've all got complicated lives and all very different lives. So for me, if I want to be a conscious co-creator, I step back and say, this is the reality of the experience I've got. What's the most creative way I can work my way through this? So I had a client one time in New York. She was a single mum, 2 kids. I imagine that's pretty tough. And she goes, I've got no time to exercise. Because she has a perception that exercise is I need to drive 45 minutes to the gym. It's going to take me an hour. Like, it's a 3-hour activity. I don't have it. I said, have you got 15 minutes to turn the music on in the living room and dance with your 2 girls? And she's like, yeah, I can do that. So again, for me, it comes down to owning it, taking responsibility for it, and then getting creative. And if you can't figure it out yourself, then you find someone outside of yourself to, you know, help you come up with, how do I work my way through this? When my clients tell me, yeah, but it's really hard, I'm like, you're telling the wrong person. I know it is. I know this stuff. So we can just stay like 80% of the population, maybe 90% of the population, being exactly the same all the way to the grave. Or we can choose, no, I want to have an evolutionary experience. So what that means is I'm going to have to do the work. And I'm sure Octavia would agree with me on the, yeah, I have to do the work. That's what the practice is all about, doing the work. Yep.
So what if you don't have a clear vision?
I think for me, I can do a meditation where I connect to the feelings I want to experience. And that can be my whole meditation. And I can let this thing come to me. Like, I don't try and force this thing. Like, let it evolve. And I do life, and I pay attention to what life is feeding back to me. And I find when I do this and drop into heart connection with the divine, like, synchronicities or ideas come to mind or whatever. So I don't get super fixated on this needs to be, you know, locked up like this by this time. It might be the evolutionary process. It might take you months, it might take years to, like, you know, really land on that sweet spot. That's our life journey experience. So until we get there, we just, like, how can I be more awesome?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I can just be more awesome. How can I serve? You know, what do I love to do? How can I do more of me in a way that's of service to others? And, you know, build around that, and that sort of grows. It might grow more organically. Okay, last question, and I'm conscious of my time because I do yap on a bit. Okay. What are my signs of tapping into the field? Joe Dispenza's thing is, like, at the end of your meditation, ask for a sign to come in a way that you'd least expect. If you know that you've connected and to get feedback that you've connected, you ask for a sign to come in a way you least expect. So it might be that you're doing something and you're like, oh, yeah, I was putting my energy in this direction. I thought it would come from this direction, but something came up over here. That's why we need to have this broad perspective view and get out of fear, get more into faith and get more into trusting life and trusting that life is for us. And this shows, it can be the littlest thing. It's like I'm in the right place at the right time. I just heard the right message. Life is for me. It's just like we get fixated in this idea it needs to be big stuff. But it can be the most simple things. It can be just a sunset. You know, too often we're going fast through life, so we don't, you know, connect to the beauty that exists all around us. And when we connect to that and we slow down and we, like, infuse ourselves with that experience, you know, then we're connected to the divine in that moment. Like, oh, okay, I get it. So, yeah, so we need to be open to the idea. It doesn't need to be big bells and whistles. Bring it back in. Feel it at this level. And we'll do that in the meditation, actually. So I'm very quickly going to show you what I've got planned for the weekend, then we'll do the meditation. So for me, the weekend is... So this Bali Reset idea is come for 4 hours with me on the Saturday. I ask you a whole bunch of questions about where you're at now, where you want to get to, who do you want to become. And I'm going to talk about this idea of becoming a natural superhuman. So that's what I've been working on for the last couple of years, is what does it mean to be a natural superhuman? How can we become that? So we're going to step into that. Ferry, my partner, cooks up an awesome snack as well, so we get a snack there. Then the part two of it is you go away. I give you a bunch of questions, a number of activities, and also a belief switch activity to do to start shifting what's happening at a subconscious level. I encourage you to go away. My favourite spot is Pondok Pisang, up the east coast of Bali at Chandidasa. But I encourage people to, like, you know, create some space, remove distraction, and really drop into some of these deeper questions. Like, a deeper question might be, if life was preparing me through my whole life existence for this particular point in time now, what's life preparing me for? Probably a question we haven't actually considered, contemplated, or thought about. So I want people to go, like, much deeper in. And then the third part of it is the idea when people integrate what they've learnt in Bali and when they go back home. So I've got like a 5-week program, Becoming a Natural Superhuman. So everyone does that. Then there's a Zoom call. And part of this process as well is looking at a transition plan. Because again, I'm big on come up with this stuff, but actually figure out how you're going to integrate it. Who do I need to get rid of in my life? Who do I need to bring into my life? What do I need to do more of? What do I need to do less of? What habits do I need to introduce? What habits do I need to get rid of? Like, really getting clear about it. So again, someone might have some ideas, but if they haven't thought of how to integrate it, it's like when people do their YTT, get to the end of the YTT, and I was, you know, when I was here, I was like, make sure you think about, you know, the transition piece, because you've been in this experience. Like, how do you transition that experience back into whatever the real world experience is back home for you? Like, don't just leave it to chance. So I'm all about strategy as well. Like, think of this stuff in advance. It's contingency planning. So what I said for tonight, if anyone wants to join the weekend workshop, just for tonight, you get 2 tickets for one. So you, like, can bring a friend along. You can't pay $500 for it. You still need to pay $100, but you get 2 tickets. So that's the special dealio for tonight. Okay. So we're going to do a guided meditation now. I call it guided meditation, mix of hypnosis. You can sit down, you can lie down, you can make yourself comfortable, make sure you're not going to knock anything over. I would ask that you turn your phones off. I want to reduce the amount of electromagnetic frequency in this space, so let's turn it off and really sink deeply into ourselves. You are the most important person in this moment, in this meditation, and your connection with the divine, not your connection with your friends on whatever social media things you use. So just getting comfortable. It's probably about 20 minutes.